Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za. Kaya Talk on Kaya 959.
On the street, on the air. So thanks again for staying with us. 6 minutes after 8 o'clock, on the line with us is Duduzani Zuma. Thank you so much for making time for us. Good evening and welcome.
Good evening, Ms. Mutenis. Thank you very much for having me.
Well, thank you.
What's happening? Let's talk, about it.
It's wonderful to have you. Really appreciate you talking to us. We want to talk about your offering, All Game Changers. You're a leader thereof. And maybe I want us to take us back, because you do state out here in your manifesto quite clearly that it was a journey. You didn't wake up one day and decide, you know, I just want to start a formation. You did a bit of research. What led you to that moment? That moment where you decided it's time to do something in the space. Politically, I want to get involved.
Yeah, Ms. Mutenis, I think it's what everyone feels and thinks about on a daily basis, and that's a desperate need for change. We all look around, we listen to the conversation, dinner table and otherwise. There's certain avenues you're all involved in, whether it's professional, whether people are studying, whether you're working. And when you take a look around, there's a dim view to what South Africa will look like in the future, and I don't want to be part of that dim view. You know, so when you look at the political actors, you look at the political play that have happened in the past 30 years, I think there's a lot to be said about it. And I feel like where we're at now, moving into the next 50 to 100 years, we're definitely off the mark. So I feel I have something to contribute as per my experiences, and that's what led me to this point.
And so All Game Changers, how would you define All Game Changers?
All Game Changers is for everybody. Mm. What politics seeks to do is to isolate people. So there's a divide that's put up. You know, that line in the sand is drawn, and it focuses on keeping people apart in ideology. You know, and that will talk to people's backgrounds, their experiences, their race, their traditions, their religions, as well as their cultural practices. All we're saying is, you know, we don't hear about the broad church talk and not living. We are those people. We've grown up in a time where we pull people together. These are our relationships. These are the people we've grown up with. These are the understandings that we have. And how do we showcase this to the world? You know, we're not just focusing on just political party shenanigans and just the small, low-level party game. We're talking about the bigger picture. And I feel like people are looking for an option to be part of that bigger picture that is representative of all of us, and not just sitting in the place and just finger pointing. We're not here to point fingers. We are where we're at. What has happened has happened. Whether we're happy or not, how do we move forward from this point, and how do we work together? So All Game Changers is for everybody that feels that they can make a difference at whatever level with whatever contribution.
Okay, let's get into the manifesto and some of the things that you've been highlighting here. You say, you know, many people speak of the fact that we, I suppose, all feel the same way. We know what the problems are. The problems are that it's not about knowing, it's about how you solve them. And sometimes there isn't the will to do that. Can you tell us, from your perspective, apart from what you said earlier, that there is a need for change, what specifically are the problems that you see as a priority need to be fixed?
Priority number one is mindset. You know, we keep looking towards political leaders and political parties as superheroes, and I don't know, grouping of the Avengers or I don't know, whatever superhero groupings are out there. It's not the way it works. It's how do we entertain the situation that we're in as South Africans? Because now what happens is we see it now. We're seeing all the marketing and the media around what's happening, and we're looking to fit into where we're driven to. Mm. What we're saying is, as the AGC, let's break it down. Let's do something completely different. The only solution that's going to come to the fore is from the people, unless we stand up. So a simple thing. Mm-hmm. How many people do you listen to complaining on a daily basis? I know I get a lot of requests. I get a lot of complaints. I get a lot of, interventionary requests. And every time I speak to people, I see the mindset is off. So what we're saying primarily is, let's flip it around. Let's not be those people that are looking for handouts. Let's not be those people that are looking for opportunities. Let's create those opportunities for each other. So we're not here promising people houses, you're not promising people jobs, you're not promising people free healthcare and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
What we're saying is let's get to a point where we build capacity where this thing can happen organically. It's that simple. We are promising people that when we get into the position that we're supposed to be in, we will create those opportunities. And the ones that will take those opportunities will take them, and the ones that don't will fall by the wayside. You know, survival of the fittest. But this free-for-all, this handout attitude of doing things is what's keeping us back.
So I take it, obviously, you've been engaging with a lot of people, bringing this idea to people. And when you do say to them, look, it starts with your mindset. How do they receive that? And do you think people get what you're saying? As you're saying, you know, you're not promising houses, you're not promising handouts and so on. You're saying, let's try and go in this together. Let's take charge and let's see where it takes us. Are people hearing that message?
The first reaction is definitely they're shell-shocked.
Mm.
They're surprised because what they expect is for people like myself to come in and preach the word that's been preached for the past however many years because of our relationships, because of our political affiliations, and that's not the case. We are younger, free-thinking, future-thinking people. So when we speak to people, they look at us, you know, initially like, hey, what are these guys talking about? But once we take them through the conversation and we take them through the possibilities, you know, this is not rocket science. It's been done elsewhere in the world. You know, we need to get our young people believing in the cause. Right now, young people are completely lost. You know, it's not like they don't have the skills. It's not like they don't understand what needs to be done. They just don't know how to do it. So we're saying, guys, step up. We're here. Let's take that lead. Let's take that risk. We've got nothing to lose. We're at rock bottom as it stands, rock bottom in the sense of the political quagmire we're in.
Mm-hmm.
It can only go up, but we cannot put our faith in a friend, and our friend is at the end of his or her runway when it comes to ideas, when it comes to energy, and when it comes to life. We need to step up. So as we take them through this journey, as we take them through the talking points, as per our experiences, because I'm a young black South African, I've got my experiences, I've had my successes, I've had my losses, but at the end of the day, it can't be taken away from me. I've played at the highest levels. I've interacted with some great individuals, both in the political space and in the economic space. I've grown up under a lot of them, and up in my story, it's a unique story, and it's a unique plan, and I form part of it. I'm not saying that I'm a superhero. I'm not saying that I am, you know, the only thing that is going for this country, but I'm definitely one of the people that can pull it in the right direction. Once we get people believing in themselves, the rest is history. Now, all we're doing is we're getting people spending their time standing on soapboxes, filling up stadiums, and talking a bunch of rubbish. That's just what it is. We're not here to talk mumbo-jumbo to people. We're here to tell people, guys, get up off your asses and get to work. It's the only way it's going to work. Otherwise, let's not waste each other's time.
So in real terms, I mean, you do speak specifically to some of the things that need to be dealt with. You speak of the quality of education, that needs to be addressed. You speak about infrastructure, that needs to be addressed. Collaboration is quite central to some of the things that you're discussing. Collaboration between different stakeholders, business, the private sector, the government, and other stakeholders. I found that interesting that you bring that up. So in real terms, first of all, where will you be in the ballot? Provincial or national?
All right, so just to bring the listeners and the people that are tuned into to the platform,
mm-hmm.
where we're at is we're a new party.
Yes.
We went through the steps. We were one of the handful of parties that were thrown a curveball last minute, even though we were in discussions with the IEC every step of the way.
Yes.
And the reason we were disqualified was we didn't submit a regional list. So the list that was supposed to be submitted as per the IEC were national, provincial, and regional. And when we'd spoken to them during the course of the discussions and registration, we asked about what we can do, what we can't do. Our interest is national. We want to swell up the National Assembly ranks.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else, we'll get to when we get to.
Okay.
And we were told you had to at least form part of the national ballot and at least one province.
Okay.
Also about regional. Regional is a bonus, so we left it out. So
okay.
I feel like it was a bit of a missed opportunity from the ISC. So as it stands, we unfortunately do not have the opportunity to swing South Africa this time around. But we're working in the background, and we're super clear that after the 29th of May, that's when the magic will happen, and we will be as relevant as ever.
Okay, so this is obviously, as you're saying, something that will go organically. You've had this curveball, so you're not going to be on the ballot, but you're working towards formation of some, I suppose, a groundswell of sorts for a future in national government.
Yes, ma'am. That is correct.
Yeah, and so when you start planning this work. In real terms, you do want to engage, as I said, all these stakeholders. How do you see people becoming part of what I would imagine to be a movement of sorts?
Yeah, so it's whichever part of the country you're in, you just need to raise your hand and make a difference at whatever level. You see, what happens at this point is, once again, it's the finger pointing and the blame game, and we're staying completely away from that. Mm-hmm. What we're saying is, here's where we are. We're in 2024. We're looking towards the future. You look around, there's not much happening. There's a lot of talk, not a lot of action. We are action-driven people. If you look at the way we live our lives, that we've engaged our business careers and now actively in our different positions in our activism level, or the cap that we wear these days and historically, we've always been action-driven. All we're doing is we're shedding a spotlight onto it. And we want to move away from the politics of desperation to the politics of inspiration. So what we do, mm-hmm. people will catch on to, because it is the only way. It's not, like I said, it's not rocket science. So wherever people are, they will see that this is a genuine thing. It's about building something that's credible, that it's going to outlast and outlive all of us. I'm 42 now. I don't want to be here when I'm in my 50s running around and campaigning. You know, I'd also like to live my life. So the whole idea is to build a vehicle, to build a movement that is not just a political movement, that is a lifestyle for people to get involved and make a difference. And I believe that everyone will gravitate to it.
You've outlined, as I said, some of the issues that that are plaguing this country. You're saying there isn't enough collaboration. Why do you think that collaboration is not working, even as everybody else talks about the collaboration? But of course, it's not happening. This is why we're here. In fact, it's not just the name calling from government side. Even the private sector says, we are not really keen to work with this government. They don't quite see eye to eye. There's net lag, but it doesn't quite seem to gel. Where do you think the problems are?
The problems are is who the control, or who the master of the destiny of Project South Africa is. I think everyone wants to have the levers of control under their control. Mm. You know, whether it be the purse strings, whether it be the decisions made when it comes to policy, when it comes to international relations. And we get that.
Yeah.
You know, but what has happened, and where I think the issue is that headbutting that has been between private sector and the public sector on who drives sentiment, who drives investment sentiment, and who drives opportunities in this country. I think everyone has got a role to play. You know, one has to coexist with the other. There's no other way. Mm-hmm. You know, and then it's who controls the major infrastructure in the country. If you look at the biggest battles that have popped up in the past 30 years, has been for the control of state-owned enterprises. Mm-hmm. You know, whether you speak about what has happened behind the scenes with people trying to pull power plays, whether you look at it now with the privatizing as opposed to keeping it at a under national control. Yeah. These are the issues that plague us. So the role players are themselves to blame for two reasons. One, the non-willingness. It's either they don't want to do it, which I think is not the greatest thing. Mm-hmm. And the other way is they don't know how to do it. There's a mistrust that has existed from pre-94 leading up to now. Mm-hmm. So we've inherited these issues. We've inherited everything that's led us to this point. And what we're saying is, guys, it's a new time. People that occupy and have the future of what would be the economic state in this country are younger people who think and understand what it is that someone like myself and yourself and many others are saying. And similarly, there are a bunch of people that are coming up within the political space that see it that way. But now the issue is protectionism. You look at policies, you look at the people who drop the policies, and you look at the people that implement them. They do not want to see things change. A few things need to change. That's just what it is. Mm. So I think it's a lack of willingness and also people not knowing what it is that they're doing.
Key to some of the things that you'd like to change is you want to still go back to the issue of the land. You're saying it's got to be with compensation. When you give people land and you hand land over, you've got to compensate people.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. 100%. I think it's a no-brainer. You know, if you look at the land issue, any war that's been fought in the past, however many centuries, has been based on land, has been based on occupation, has been based on displacement. We look at some of the wars being fought now in the Middle East. Israel-Palestine issue, it's a land issue. We've seen what's happened in Zimbabwe. We've seen what's happened in different parts of South America. We've seen how Australia has had to deal with these issues. We've seen what's happening in Jammu and Kashmir between India and Pakistan. It's a land issue. So what I'm saying and what the people that I'm affiliated to are saying is land is the ultimate resource. Land is the rallying point for what life is, for what benefit is. You know, everything that exists from the properties that we work in, we live in, that we lease, we rent, we develop, is based on land. We mine. So if we are going to upset that apple cart of saying, guys, we're taking this piece of land that's valued at X, whatever that amount is, and we're giving it away for free. I mean, it's the part of whether it is operated correctly or not, the secondary. The primary part is the world exists on an economic system that is based on land and the value of land. That's as simple as it is. And we cannot miss it. And I think it's only fair. We understand the land dispossession acts. We understand. I mean, I'm black, you know, so I understand the nature of it, the history of it. I've seen and then experienced the issues of landlessness and not having that as collateral to hand over to the bank for loans and everything. Everything we needed to do is to build it for ourselves. We are at a disadvantage. I'm not taking disadvantage. Mm-hmm. I'm not taking that away from the reality. Mm. All I'm saying is if this thing is going to work, there has to be a willing buyer, has to be a willing seller. And I believe that if we take that attitude, we'll be very surprised on how beneficial and how willing people will be able to jump on this, especially as private landowners. There's a lot of land to go around, and all we want to do is make this place work, and I believe it can work if we attack it that way. And then my final point would be, there are a lot of people sitting and on podiums, sitting in interviews, talking about this land issue and redistribution without compensation. I can guarantee you they do not believe in that. They know it's not going to work. All this pussyfooting in Parliament and jumping around the issue and trying to move the bill around and it's not being signed and who's leading the act is all smoke and mirrors. It's not going to happen. It's never going to happen. It's not the way it's meant to be done. This thing needs to be structured in a very realistic manner, and we're the ones that will be able to do it. And we need to be brave. And we need to be aggressive and deliberate about it. That, guys, this is what it is. We as a government, we'll be the referee, but we'll make sure that everyone gets their fair share and everyone gets fair treatment on this. Otherwise, not going to happen.
On the same issue of land, you point to rural land that you think needs to be cultivated better, as you say, and people who are in rural South Africa, who you feel should be given opportunities. Just maybe explain further.
Yeah, sure. So if you look at the wealth that's been created in this country, you take a look around, you look at besides, I think a handful is too much, besides two or three traditionally areas that are owned by kings and traditional landowners, chiefs, ndunas, whatever it is, a lot of that wealth has not been transferred. And we cannot sit and blame people that, we've been sitting here and people haven't come to invest and these people are not interested in us. We've got to be go-getters. A lot of the pockets of land that exist are wealthy pieces of land. Agriculturally, if you look at some of the forests that exist, you look at some of the mining areas that exist, you look at some of the pieces of prime land that are there to be developed as prime real estate as per their land value. They're there under chiefs that do not have enough money to put food on the table on a daily basis. And that speaks to one thing. We are not pointing our energies and our resources in the right direction. But similarly, our traditional leadership, our government, whether it be from the contralesser level or just to the chiefs and kingdoms in their individual capacities, are not being aggressive enough to go get that bag. We need to go get that money. We can't just sit back and wait for it. And I know people will say, but how do you expect these people to do something? They've got nothing going for them. All I'm saying is I can tell you people that have arrived with nothing from Europe. I can name names now who've come into this country and have made billions in the past 3 to 5 years. How do we explain that? It's because they've got a go-getting attitude. You know, so we need to direct this energy and get our people to say, guys, forget about what's happening elsewhere. With the land, and this is a major point, mm-hmm. with the land that we have, besides the one that we plan on redistributing with compensation, mm-hmm. let's make it work. Whilst we're fighting this battle, let's make what we have within our ambit, within our control, let's make it work. It's a different conversation to have when we have something that's flourishing.
Bongani, thanks again for your patience. Good evening and welcome.
Good evening, Pamela, and good evening to Dizani and listeners at home.
Welcome, Bongani.
Yeah, quick two questions. Is that, Dizani, you just mentioned the issue with regards to the land transformation, where you'll be claiming the land, especially you've mentioned about the rural areas, people, where you need to transform more there, especially in terms of the land. And the mission and the vision of the former president, Jacob Zuma, I don't want to identify him as your father or whatsoever, just to show respect, but the former president is stressing one message, which is claiming the land back from Umkhonto we Sizwe. And you also claiming the very same thing about land transformation and reclaiming it. So what makes you guys, two of you, opening different parties, being in the different parties, however you're spreading one word? And should it happen, you in a governance with regard to your party, what will make you to start now to do transformation, whereas over and time again there, back in days, President Jacob Zuma failed to do that while he was still a president, and 2 terms. Now, even, although it was not full 2 terms to do the land transformation and to reclaim the land to the blacks, and you're going to start it now. What will make you to start it now? Second question is that, are you having the 10 principles that you're going to do or that you're going to initiate in terms of initiating every single point that you're going to make sure that anything that you wish for the black people, it's happening? What is it that first thing that you're going to do?
Bongani, just pause there while Duduzani gets a chance to respond, Mr. Zuma.
Thank you very much, Ms. McKenna. Bongani, thank you very much for calling in and for being patient with us. I'll answer your second question first. The one thing that I'll do for us as black people is make us be serious about what it is that we're doing. I think the problem that we have is we've had a long period of time where we've been made to believe that we are not capable of doing great. And I'm not talking about apartheid. I'm not talking about white people. I'm talking about ourselves as black people. We look at the past 30 years, as I said, politics of inspiration, not desperation. So what we've had are people that have created a situation where we feel like we are unable to do things and we are useless in our beings, and that's not it. So we're going to inspire people. We're going to make people believe, once again, that we can do it, and we can do it at the highest levels. Everything else will fall into place. Like I said, not here to make empty promises. It starts off with a mindset change. You know, it's a spiritual awakening in the sense of within ourselves, we need to understand what our mission is as black people to occupy our rightful space. And to answer the first question on the land issue, just, you know, my apologies, and I don't want to sound like I'm being rude to you, but there are differences between what any other party, including the MK, and then what it is that we are saying as the AGC. So I beg to differ on the point that we've got myself and ourselves as the AGC have got similar viewpoints on the land issue with the MK. So there definitely won't be any issues. We're on completely opposite ends as per our ideology on that, and we are very serious about ours. We mean business about it because we believe it's the only way that it can be done and it will be done. And, you know, what has been said by our predecessors, and it's not only the former President Jacob Zuma, and I mean, it's a lot of people that have been in positions of power, a lot of great leaders, you know, past and present. And they unfortunately haven't gotten to a point where they've been able to get whatever ideas they had, whatever talking points, into fruition as a whole. Maybe they've run out of time, maybe they've run out of ideas. That's for them to answer not myself. What I'm saying is we're here now. This is what we're going to do moving forward. That old way, the old school way of thinking, the old school way of delivering the message and getting people excited about getting things done. That's not what we're here for. You know, not here to stand on a stage and sing and dance. Guys, we mean business. If we're going to do this thing, let's be serious, let's be professional, and let's get it done. You know, let's not waste each other's time by saying things that we believe people want to hear. And also the people listening to the message, you know, you are to blame yourself. You can't sit there year in, year out, rally in, rally out. Election year, every two to 5 years, local government or national elections, where you're hearing the same message. You have to blame yourself for that. You can't blame anyone else.
So
ideologically speaking, we are on different ends, and
yeah.
I don't think it's a problem. We think in a separate way, and you know, we're not coming with old school tactics.
It's quite clear from your manifesto that you are quite ideologically very different to, for instance, the MK Party. Was there a consideration to collaborate with the MK Party?
So from our side, we will work with whoever is willing to work with us. You know, that goes for anybody. If it's MK, if it's Freedom Front Plus, if it's the ANC, if it's the DA, if it's the EFF, if it's the Patriotic Alliance, if it's the IFP, whoever's out there. And why I'm saying this is the unfortunate thing that we have is we use these political parties and the political banners and sloganeering as if we're not neighbors, as if we didn't grow up together, as if we didn't grow up under the elders that would have overseen and over us. And it's as if, like, we don't inspire other youngsters coming up. Guys, we're from the same place, we're from the same people. You know, so every time we're seeing political violence, we're seeing people getting killed for positions, councillors, mayorships. You know, you have to ask yourself, what the hell is going on? We all have the same ideas. We all want to see the same things. We want to see peace and prosperity. You know, we want to live in a safe and secure country. We all have different ways to get to the promised land, but we all want to get to the same promised land. How does it get to a point where we sit here and we insult each other? You watch Parliament, it's as if we're all from different corners of the world. We live in the same country. So from outside, to make it clear, anyone that's willing to work with us, we'll work with them, no problem. Mm-hmm. But we're not going to be the ones that are going to be shaken up and made to kiss the ring or to bend on one knee. Not going to happen. It's going to be how we see it, working and moving forward with the opportunity that's presented to us, because everyone's had a fair go. It's our time.
Musi is calling as well. She is a social justice activist. Musi, thanks for your patience. Good evening and welcome.
Good evening, and thank you very much for having me. Good evening, Duduzani. I'm very curious about just a couple of things, but I'll keep it short and sweet.
Yes, ma'am.
So, Duduzani, we do definitely understand that you have, to a large extent, grown up in a position of privilege, which might make you divorced from the realities of ordinary South Africans on the ground who have not grown up with the same privilege that you have. And unfortunately, we don't always choose who we're born or which family we're born into. You have been born to a very prominent family that has, you know, leaders that essentially fought against the apartheid regime, which has given you access to a lot of privileges, which many can consider to have influenced your divorce or detachment from the current reality of South Africans in present day today, especially when looking at unemployment and gender-based violence. Now, my question particularly is around your manifesto as a political party, being the leader of a new political party called All Game Changers. Where is your manifesto? We have not been able, as a large populace, been able to access your manifesto in order for us to basically understand what you're trying to do with this new political party. And more importantly, when you speak about the land question, and you speak about your position around land, what is the ideology that informed your position on land? Because you don't have, you know, access to your manifesto, we're unable to interrogate to a large extent the nuances and the thematic expressions within that manifesto in order for us to be able to understand the ideological position behind it. And I also want to understand, what are the artificial limitations that are placed on your political party that are, you know, deterring you from the main objective for running for elections? I ask this particular question because in April it was reported that the IEC had removed your party from the national list citing that, you know, there was lack of compliance with registration processes. So I want to particularly understand, apart from what you are promising as a political party, what are the artificial limitations that are deterring you from achieving your main objective? What is your main objective? What is the ideological stance behind the land question? And where do women fall into your political agenda or your political objectives? What is or how do you attend to the women question and the issue around gender and equity, not only in the workplace, but also within ordinary South African homes? I hope I was able to adequately express that. Okay. And wherever I am limited, if you're looking for a first lady, something to vent. I'm available, eh? I just want to put that out there just so that the nation knows. Thank you.
You know, Busi, so I have to say this, Mr. Zuma. Busi yes. calls for almost every single political party, and she's robust and she's very quick-witted. She has, you know, she's got very difficult questions. I am absolutely amazed, Busi. That's how you end your question. But let me not take
shout
the,
out to Busi.
Let me not
Busi.
Take let me not take your shine away, Busi. Mr. Zuma, your response, please.
Yeah, I'll try and keep it brief because I know we don't have much time. Busi, thank you very much for your questions. I think firstly, I'll answer them in chronological order. The first one was about my privilege and being divorced and devoid from the happenings on the ground and the reality. I think that's quite unfair. I think that's an assumption that's made. I think that's one of my, when I always speak about one of the biggest misconceptions about myself, and I'll speak for my family as well. Is that we were born with silver spoons in our mouths. No, that's not the case. We were born in exile. I mean, we're not living in Hyde Park or Piccadilly Circus or Kensington in the UK or other places that people lived in. You know, we're living in Mozambique and Zambia and Zimbabwe. And were we living in abject poverty? No. But it was tough out there, you know, before we moved into South Africa. And people need to realize when it comes to the political space that my father was involved in. He only came into the high-level positions in, let's call it, the late 90s, early 2000s. And yes, of course, that came with certain bells and whistles and privileges for him, and not for me. And I'll speak for myself. And if you track me back, you know, I've always stayed away from the trappings of the government's sphere and all the lovely stuff that it was brought forward. I've created my own path. I've created my own way. People always think that I'm speaking hot air, but here we are. Politically, the easiest thing to do would have been to have stayed in my former political organization, which is the ANC, or to have moved into the MK. That would have been a no-brainer, mm-hmm. and that's what a lot of people speak about. Mm-hmm. But we're not doing that because we're not those people. You know, we know what hard yards are. We know what building is about, and we know what it is that we're doing. We believe in and we stand in what we're speaking about. The second point was on the information. So when it comes to the information, I think the easiest portal would be allgamechangers.co.za. That's the website. And everything else that stems from there will be the social media space. So all the information that you're looking for, even your fourth question that you asked about women equity, women empowerment, the protecting of females in this country as per femicide and everything else is in that document. You know, a lot of it has to be expanded, has to be spoken about. These are the opportunities we get on shows like these to do so, because it's one thing reading about it, another thing having a conversation or input verbally about it. So allgamechangers.co.za, everything is that you need to know is there, and it's going to start taking some interesting shape as we move along, especially post-elections. Unfortunately, we'll speak about the third question that was raised about artificial limitations. You know, from a timetable perspective, yes, we were putting all our energy into what would be next week, Wednesday, the 29th. That hasn't happened. So we've had to just switch it up a bit, and we'll get back to getting a whole lot more intense, you know, because unfortunately we're not on the ballot. But the artificial limitations, I don't get into it. Whatever's happened has happened. We're not going to challenge it. I think it was unfair. I think it's something that was a missed opportunity from the IEC and for South Africa at large, not just for the AGC, but other up-and-coming parties. we need to create the space. The IEC has been, I think they missed the boat on this one. Even if the ballot paper looked like a telephone book, then so be it. You need to give people an opportunity to give people an opportunity to find their place in what they feel would be the right representation. And the IEC hasn't done that. They've cut out a whole host of people, not just the AGC, the other people that would be relevant, I believe, to what people stand for. Because people are looking for change. That's the main objective here.
You know, you speak of missed opportunities. Will your funders be as patient as you are?
The people that I associate myself with, the people that I deal with, the people that I work with, are just as patient as I am. Because everyone understands, as much as it's a long-term play, there's some short-term wins and losses, and we're in it for the long haul. So it's not about funders. There's no one that we've approached. There's no system and pool. This is something that has grown organically. If you look at the work that's been done, mm-hmm. it's been done by people in different communities that have taken up the fight. I sometimes get amazed with people that have a whole lot less than some of us do are pushing this AGC like you can't believe. You know, it's bubbling under. It's definitely going to spill over in a positive way. And when people realize that that's as organic as you're saying it is, people will be in for shocks. You know, we're not here trying to play the resource game. We're not here trying to throw money at the problem. We are saying to people, we want people that are active. We want people that mean well. And we want people that are hardworking. If that's not you and that's not what you're trying to do, that's all good. You can go somewhere else. Go mess around somewhere else.
Let's take a quick break. Duduzane Zuma is the leader of All Game Changers. All Game Changers is led by Duduzane Zuma, and he's in on the line with us, taking your calls on 086-000-0959. So let's talk about, you've just alluded to the timelines that, you know, you obviously were looking forward to participating on the 29th of May. That wasn't to be. What then are your long-term goals, Mr. Zuma?
The long-term goal is what South Africa will look like in the next 50 to 100 years, and that is building it up now. So our activity, our movements are focused on getting buy-in from society, and that buy-in has to be, you know, the currency that we're using is effort. Mm. That's all. You know, we're not looking for your money. We're not looking for any other resource than your effort. You know what needs to be done. And where we're at now, what is going to get us to the next level is like-minded people, one vision, one energy pushing in the right direction. And that's what we're focused on. Mm. So as much as it's not active campaigning for the sake of, for the reasons of elections or electioneering in that sense, it's basically a daily based activity. Wherever you are, politics needs to be a lifestyle. It can't be an event. It can't be a season. It needs to be something that people do. People like the likes of Musi or activists in their own right. You know, people need to be more involved in politics in our country. Doesn't mean you want to be or you need to be a position holder in government, but you need to be active because everything that we do in this country is affected by political decisions taken by people that, unfortunately, as it's clear to see, are not truly reflective of our society and do not represent us. So that's where we are.
You speak of principled leadership in your movement in AGC. You speak of trust being at the center of that, saying that you want to build trust, you want people to trust this organization. How are you going to do that? And are you finding that it's easy for people to trust you?
Yeah, it's very easy for people to trust me. You know, and I'm saying this because fortunately, I've had my own trials and tribulations. I'm saying fortunate because I'm not saying it was a walk in the park. You know, it was a very testing moment in my life with a lot of the allegations that I would have had. And, you know, I'm here almost 10 years later and, you know, all the allegations that have been leveled against me have been false. I've been tried, but I haven't been convicted. You know, as a matter of fact, I've fought court cases, I've been to state capture commissions, and till this day, I've been prejudiced in a certain manner when it comes to my so-called constitutional rights. Mm-hmm. So that being said, with all that negativity that was cast upon me, you know, when I bump into people, you know, there's a lot of love out there, there's a lot of trust out there, there's a lot of belief in me. And, you know, that's what drives me every day. You know, just when I think, you know what, you know, what is this thing going to look like? What is the journey going to look like? I get reminded on a daily basis that, dude, you're on the right path. You're not alone. We're here. Just because you don't hear us or you don't see us in some cases does not mean that we are not here. So, as much as there's been a lot of negativity, and I get it, some people will like me, some people will not like me, but I think some total, definitely on the positive side, and the trust factor is there, and that's why people are choosing to work with myself and the organization.
You have some concerns around education and some ideas around what needs to be done to take us to the future of what you believe education needs to look like. Just maybe elaborate on that.
Yeah, so firstly, we need to understand that we have everything that we have in this country, the problems that we have generally, whether it be from the security clusters, the law enforcement, to the transportation, so the networks, logistics and networks, railroad and everything. Within the education space, and we even speak about healthcare, within the education space, we have schools that are being shut down left, right and center. How are we building a society that's going to educate people when schools are being shut down because they are not fit to operate? And these are government schools. So the focus is on government. The one thing that we always do is we criticize private sector, we call them all sorts of names, and they're not innocent in some cases, don't get me wrong. But if you look at a lot of the development that's happened over a period of time, the private sector's got it right, because their decision-making from point A to point B is a whole lot quicker than government. So turnaround time to implementation is what we stand for, and that's one of our key points. On the education sector, definitely people need to get hold of free quality education. There's no doubt about that. How we do it is something that we have different ideas on, and part of it is channeling the right budgets and getting to a point where we have self-sustainable budgetary requirements to fund education, whether it be at secondary, primary, and even tertiary level. You know, there's a historical debt issue. We know that a lot of the universities are privately owned. The government needs to build credible, world-class government institutions of higher learning. That's as simple as it is. You know, we can't always be just, when things go wrong, we're just looking at private sector and then trying to strong arm them with their issues and with their shortcuts that they may have. And in some cases, they've done a marvelous job. There's no, you know, we can't hate them. It's there to see, even though their prices may be through the roof, but their amenities are there. The other thing that we need to focus on is our education. So if you look at our different sectors that contribute to our GDP in our country, you know, it's mining, which is the backbone of our economy that it's built on. It's agriculture, it's tourism, it's manufacturing, you know, and a few others. But these are the main ones. Mm. So we need to get to a point where we gear our students early in the game, not when they have to make decisions at some career guidance day, when they're in late high school, grade 10, 11, 12, whatever it is. We're talking about primary school already. Mm-hmm. Guys, these are opportunities that you're going to find in hospitality along the coast, along the river channels. These are the opportunities you find in the agricultural sector. You talk about food security. You know, South Africa is a country that is geared for massive agricultural programs, and how we learn that from people that have done well in that space and how they grew people that are going to be future farmers in this mm-hmm. country. You know, so
you want those mentors to come into schools, am I right? You want to bring them at the school level, not just tertiary level.
It has to, and we need to, yes, 100%. That's it. Yes, the answer is yes. Mm. At primary school. Secondary school is too late. Mm. It's too late. We need to get our students active at an early age. By the time we're speaking about someone who's going to be a potential geologist, they need to have dealt with or visited or have been visited by mining engineers, by mining houses, bosses and managers and executives. It needs to happen earlier. So gearing our society to take advantage of what South Africa has as part of its basket of opportunities. Mm-hmm. Now, there's no sense in you talking about getting, everyone now becomes, and no, we're not trying to deter people from becoming accountants and auditors and lawyers, but there's only a certain pool of opportunities that exist there. The problem with our people in our country is they do not want to get their hands dirty when it comes to hands-on jobs. Let's not be afraid. Let's roll up our sleeves. That's what we do. So people can't fault us because we do that on a daily basis. We're not afraid to get into the trenches, and that's the attitude that we need to develop when we are attacking these opportunities. So the education sector to be geared to what the South African economy is built on.
Let's talk a little bit, and I know we've run almost out of time now, about this economy and the collaboration. You want collaboration to happen more pointedly between different sectors as well as the government and other stakeholders. The economy itself, from what I'm reading, you do want to be pro-business, give tax breaks and so on to try and give them a leg up in boosting this economy. Am I understanding it correctly?
Yes, it's correct, ma'am. So I'll expand on that.
Go ahead, Mr. Zuma.
Thank you, Ms. Mokeni. Yes, that's exactly the point. You know, where we at now is people like using these fancy terms to politicize certain things within the economic sector. This country is not going to work without business people. This country is not going to work without investors, that being private investors. Government is a regulator. Government is a tax collector. That's as simple as it is. Everything else is up to you and me to create opportunities to bring the money in. Us as locals and then our international counterparts to come through. So if we are chasing these people away, who's going to put money into this country? Nobody. This country is only going to work if private people pull money out from their pockets, their relationships with the different networks of banks and venture capitalists and hedge funds and investment firms elsewhere in the world. That's just the way it works. There is no other way around it. Government cannot keep trying to do it on behalf of, you know, the budget is not enough. You know, as an example, if you look at the top companies, number one and two, and I haven't checked it in some time, but I mean, if you look at the amount of value that they've generated as per market capital, it is almost the same, if not the same as the tax collected annually. That tells you a story of what South Africa is and where the opportunities lie and who has the biggest budgets. So let's not shy away from it. Let's promote it. Let's welcome it. Let's grow business. The more investors come into the country, the more opportunities created, the more people get to work. It's as simple as that. We can't sit promising people jobs and we've got no idea of how jobs are going to work. We can't just be pushing people into EPWP projects because we're trying to get votes or we're trying to say, no, we've employed people. That's a bunch of rubbish. What we're saying is, let people come, let them place their money down, let's get these roads built, let's get these railway networks built. I mean, on its own, that's a project. Let's get nuclear power stations built. Let's get infrastructure development. The only way this country's going to work is if we reindustrialize. Let's not shy away from reindustrializing. Let's get these mills going. Let's get these smelters going. Let's see flames in the sky and let's see, you know, trucks on the road. You know, I get it. There's issues of emissions and there's net zero and all that sort of thing. But we're a developing country. Let us find our feet first. We have not found our feet. We cannot talk about the fourth industrial revolution when we haven't even perfected the second one. So we also need to introspect and be realistic with where we're at and not try to catch up to the world when the world is showing us a magic trick and then we keep falling towards
So realistically, what are you gunning for in the next election? So let's say the next election. Who knows? Maybe you'll probably go for the local government election. What are you looking at here? What's your goal?
So the goal is, you know, I don't like talking. I want to talk from national election downwards I prefer it that way because I think it's a much bigger picture. So people, you know, can buy into the bigger picture and everything else will put into it. So what we are gunning for is for complete control. You know, yes, people talk about 2/3 and all that sort of thing. That would be great. But I don't think 2/3 will be achieved in the next 20 to 30 years in this country where we are. But I think for a sizable number where we can take decisions actively, in real time, ASAP, to get things working in this country. We want to pull everyone together. We want to pull every stakeholder together. And remember, from my side, and why I speak so openly about it is, you know, I'm not here to preach the word of socialism and Marxism and that sort of thing. That's not the world I'm from. We understand those constructs of politics. But where I'm at, if we're going to get this country moving, it's a function of money, nothing else. It's not a function of kumbayaing left, right, and center. Money's going to make this country work. Money's going to make this world work. So where we're at is we're gunning for a sizable, and I do believe if we were part of this election, we would have gotten as a new entrant. I believe we would have gotten to close to the 2 million mark. I definitely believe that. And by the next one, there'll definitely be more, because after the 29th of May, the only thing that's going to happen is everyone is going to reflect and everyone's going to say, here we are again, we're back to square one, whichever parties are in the system, because everyone is talking politics for the sake of talking politics. Mm-hmm. No one is focusing on the real issues, and that's why we're stuck in the situation.
So, if someone's listening right now and they want to be a part of this movement, how do they do that?
www.allgamechanges.co.za. Mm-hmm. The information is there, the sign-up is there, it's an online sign-up. And besides that, you know, we're not gunning for membership and card carrying this and all that sort of thing. By the way, the membership is free. What we're saying is, from your goodwill, just do what you need to do. That's all. We'll meet up in the front. Let's not attack this political thing or the opportunity that has been created, because I'm looking at that as exactly what it is. You know, this is the biggest opportunity that we have in South Africa. As much as we are down in the doldrums, it's the biggest opportunity we have to make change. Mm. And that's why I'm bullish about it. I'm super confident and excited about where we're going. Just do what you need to do. Stop being that person that sits back and throws stones. Take those stones and let's build this country. Let's pile them up and let's build something incredible. That's all you need to do. We're not here. We don't want you coming in. And singing all sorts of lovely songs. We get that, but that's not why we're here. We're here to work. You see us, you come to us, let's do this, trying to have these fancy discussions. When we get to Parliament, we don't want to have these debates. We all know what needs to be done. Let's do it. What are we talking about?
All Game Changers leader, Duduzane Zuma, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much, Ms. Mutenu. Thank you for this opportunity, and I appreciate your energy. You are a game changer yourself. And I'm saying this, you know, I'm not trying to sound clever or anything, but, you know, we grew up on you. You are one of the first needle movers for what entertainment was and is right now. We respect you for that, and I'm glad that you're still in the system and you're pushing the envelope. So I appreciate it, and I'm super honored to be on your show. Thank you very much, man.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much for your time.